Election theft. Our guest will be Harvey Wasserman. He's a longtime advocate for getting rid of nuclear power, particularly active in the Onifree nuclear power plant in Southern California, getting it shut down. But Harvey is an activist who speaks on all manner of subjects, and his recent concern is the potential theft of the election by Donald Trump and his minions.
Pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Please, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam. And a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
This is Ecotopia. I'm KZFR 90.1 Chico. And we are exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. I'm Susan Chudy.
I'm Stephen Chudy.
And tonight we are playing a pre-recorded interview with Harvey Wasserman. Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Corona Conscious Chico Certified Farmers Markets with year-round markets on Wednesday mornings at the North Valley Plaza and on Saturday mornings at 3rd and Wall in downtown Chico. The Chico Certified Farmers Market, connecting farmers and food lovers since 1980. The opinions voiced on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, or volunteers, or underwriters. And now here is our pre-recorded interview with Harvey Wasserman.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, serving the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. I'm Stephen Chudy.
And I'm Susan Chudy. This program is part of our ongoing series called Radical Change, where we are inviting guests to give us their no-holds-barred views of what is needed to bring about big change, paradigm-shifting change in this country.
Our guest on this program is Harvey Wasserman. He's also known as Sluggo because of his alleged resemblance to the cartoon character in the old Nancy comic strip, but more so for his prowess on the baseball diamond. Sluggo has been on this show several times in the past. His focus then was chiefly on alternatives to nuclear energy. No nukes. He's got a T-shirt that says no nukes. And it's described on his solartopia.org website.
But his interests and concerns are very broad, as demonstrated by his most recent book, The People's Spiral of History, which starts with the pre-Columbian, oh boy, Jigosnasa. One more time.
Jigosnasa was the original Iroquois matriarch.
Okay.
She was the woman who was responsible for bringing together the Iroquois Confederacy, the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, which was the first democratic government in North America and actually the most democratic government in world history.
And she's known as the Mother of Nations and goes all the way to life after Trump.
Right. So this is my history of the United States, and I had it all set to go, and then I realized I can't publish it until we get Trump out of the White House. So official update will be January 20th, 2021.
Awesome.
Okay. We're going to ask you about the spiral of history that's part of that book anyway, but we wanted to start out with a huge question, one that you're uniquely equipped to answer, and that is, how did we get in this mess? And by
got in this mess, people have to look at Donald Trump and understand that there's two causes behind Donald Trump. Number one, we are an empire, and we have been imposing horrible dictators, torturers, murderers, thieves, mobsters, like Donald Trump, on other countries for more than almost 200 years. And actually, it's more than 200 years. You got to start around 1803 with Thomas Jefferson's invasion of Tripoli on the Barbary Coast. And you can go before that, of course, to the indigenous and what we did to the indigenous. So Donald Trump is the karmic sum of the horrible dictators that we've put in power all over the world throughout history. And Americans who are whining about how did we get this horrible man in the White House, if he is in fact a human being, and I'm not convinced, the reason is karma. He is our imperial karma. Mm-hmm. Think about Pinochet in Chile, Somoza in Nicaragua, Mobutu in the Congo, Marcos in the Philippines. All these horrible, vicious, vile mobster dictators that we've put in power and imposed on innocent people all over the world, that's Trump. And we have karma to pay, and that's how we have to look at him. The second reason he's in there is because of the failure of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is led by Bill Clinton in the 1980s. Basically, the Clintons sold the Democratic Party to Goldman Sachs. And it ceased being a political party and just basically turned into a fundraising operation with no real political principles. There has been no, except for Obamacare, there has been no significant social legislation in this country to help working people since the Vietnam War. I mean, you look at the Great Society and where it was headed, Medicare, Medicaid, Head Start, all the Great Society programs, they died with the Vietnam. Nothing has come since, you know, except this halfway measure on health care. And so working people have been shafted in this country. The wages are the same now in real terms as they were in the 1970s. And people are angry. And of course, when they're angry, they always turn straight to racism. And racism is the tool of the ruling class. Slavery was actually not set up as a labor system. It was set up as a way to divide the working class. Because in 1686, and this obviously is in my history of the United States, there was a rebellion in Virginia. And it was led by a planter. He was a bit of a character. Nathaniel Bacon was his name. It's called Bacon's Rebellion. And he unified, he was a terrible guy, but he overthrew the government of Virginia with a coalition of black and white indigenous servants. And it was a very racist uprising. They wanted more Indian land. They wanted to take more land from the indigenous. But he unified the blacks and the whites to overthrow the government in Jamestown. And the planting class, Bacon died, the governor of Virginia died, Berkeley died. The rebellion ended, but the ruling class in Virginia said, hey, we cannot allow black and white indentured servants to unify again. Now, at the time, this is hard to In the current climate, it's hard to understand. But blacks and whites got along fine in Virginia up to the 1680s. Racism is not inherent to the human species. If you put black and white kids, exclusive of their upbringing, raising as Quakers, for example, if you put them in a room 4, 5, 6 years old, and they will not have racial conflict. It is not an inherent trait of human beings to be racist. It's learned behavior, and it's based on the need of the ruling class to play black against white. And so what they did in Virginia in the late 1600s is they set up a caste system, C-A-S-T-E, where it wasn't just racism. The blacks were relegated to becoming non-human, subhuman, so that they would, no matter how bad off a white person was in Virginia, they were still better off than a black person. So you could exploit white people to your heart's content, but they would never unify with blacks. Because even though they might be poorer than a black family, they considered themselves superior. And that's the basis of racism. And so what's happened in America since the Vietnam War is that you've had a ruling class that absolutely refuses to bend and grant anything worthwhile. And so, you know, where we were headed towards social democracy in the 1960s, race has been used to play black against white and totally screw up society. And that's where Donald Trump comes from. That's who Donald Trump is. He's the American Hitler. And, you know, he's doing to the blacks what Hitler did to the Jews. And, of course, to the kids at the border, you know, the people of Hispanic origin. But I'm going to tell you right now that if, you know, forget about the polls, if the election was held today, Donald Trump would win in a landslide. Not because he has popular support, which he does not. He will emerge soon enough. I mean, the one thing that's propping him up at all is the stock market. And the stock market is on really thin ice. You know, do not be surprised to wake up tomorrow and then see the stock market sub 1929. But what they're counting on is stealing the election. And everybody needs to understand this. The election of 2020 is defined by a trifecta. Three pieces, a three-legged stool. Number one is voter registration rolls. Number two is vote by mail. And number three is counting the votes, the vote count. And if you sabotage any one of those three, you can swing the election. The stool will fall over. Now, what's that involve? Number one, voter registration. They have been stripping. Well, the reality of the election, the political reality of this election dates back to 2010. What happened in 2010 was Obama was in the White House. And he was just cruising along. You know, Obama was Obama. My wife has referred to him as a hologram. And, you know, he was just in the White House and he was having a good old time, did not pay attention to what was happening. And in 2010, Karl Rove, Corey Lewandowski, and the other Republican operatives, who are very smart, went to the Koch brothers. And they said, look, the electoral map is what it is. And 2010 will be a redistricting year. And here are maybe 50 state, House, and Senate races that if we win them, we will take control of the redistricting process in all the key swing states. And the Democrats, as always, were completely asleep at the switch. They weren't paying attention. They didn't care. You know, Obama was being Obama, and they did it. And there's a book about it whose name I can't say. It's Rat Effed, RATFU-. I can spell it, RATFUCKED. It's a brilliant book. And somebody in some marketing department decided to go ahead and call it that, what can I tell you? So they pulled it off. They used the Koch money, Karl Rove and these Republican operatives. They picked off the key legislative races in places like Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, Arizona, right? Mm-hmm. And they took control of all the state legislatures in the swing states. So you now have extreme right-wing legislatures in states that are 50-50 Democrat, Republican. Ohio, which is 50-50, right? Maybe even 51 Democrat, has a state legislature that's like the Night of the Living Dead. I mean, these guys are so corporate right-wing, it's unbelievable. And the same is true in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, Arizona, not to mention Georgia, Texas, Iowa, a few other states. And because of that, they took the Congress, because they redistricted the Congress for the congressional seats. And now we're going into this 2020 election, and these legislatures are completely trashing the process. They're demanding ID. They're sabotaging vote by mail. They're rigging the vote count. And that's what we face. So I'm telling you right now, no matter what the polls say, if the election happened today, they have stripped 17 million people off the voter rolls. They are sabotaging vote by mail so that people will not get ballots. Or if they get ballots at all, they're going to be misprinted. There'll be terrible problems. You have to dot every I and cross every T. And get in some states, you have to have a notary. In some states, you have to have two witnesses. North Carolina, you only need one, but still, you got to photocopy your ID. I mean, they're doing everything they possibly can. And if the election happened today, they'd win. Mm-hmm. Same with the ballots. We have a chance in this election to actually have a real revolution in voting in this country. It's a bit of a story, but we seem to have time, and you seem to be content to hear me yap away. So here's the history. Again, this is in my People's Spiral of U.S. History, and I'll send you a copy on January 20th. Pray God that, that we'll have a change of government.
Yeah.
So what happened was, in the 20th century, you had paper ballots, you had a combination, you had machines, which are easily corruptible. Then in 2000 in Florida, you had a Republican governor, Jeb Bush, the brother of George W., right? These two kids were raised in the CIA by George H.W. Bush, who I actually met. Quite charming, actually. Mm-hmm. Brilliant guy. And the one thing the CIA knew how to do was to steal elections. And Bush stole his election in 1988 in the primary in Wisconsin using electronic machines. So they went in 2020. And in South Florida, with Jeb as the governor, first of all, they stripped the voter rolls. They stripped 90,000 people off the voter rolls. And people to this day are screaming at Ralph Nader for whatever. Ralph Nader ran for president. During the campaign, he begged Al Gore to meet with him. As if Ralph Nader hadn't accomplished anything as the greatest consumer activist in American history. I mean, there are no modern activists with the kind of accomplishments that Ralph Nader has done. So he runs for president, perfectly legitimate, and he asked Gore to meet with him. And obviously, if Gore could have lowered himself to meet with Ralph Nader, they could have worked out a deal and Ralph wouldn't have run as he did in Florida. But Gore wouldn't meet with him. And then Ralph gets 90,000 votes. But the fact is, and Bush won by 537, right? But the reality is that if everybody in Florida who had voted for Ralph Nader in 2000 had voted for Al Gore, Jeb Bush still would have won. And by Jeb, I mean Jeb, the governor, mm-hmm. because the governor rigged the election. Didn't matter how many votes Al Gore got. Didn't matter how many votes Ralph Nader got. Didn't matter how many votes George W. Bush got. George W. Bush was going to win Florida in 2000, no matter what. And people better stop blaming Ralph Nader. It's not Nader's fault. He didn't have anything to do with it. And if Gore would have met with him, maybe they could have worked out a way around it. But as it was, Jeb Bush stole that vote count. Now, what you had in that election was a fiasco in South Florida with the paper ballots. They did have paper ballots in South Florida. So what the Republicans did, and they controlled the election boards, is they went in and they put out these ridiculous butterfly ballots. And they were set up so, and I've seen them, I've held them in my hand, it's set up so that if you couldn't figure out, it was impossible to figure out how to vote. And they had it set up so that if you thought you were voting for Gore, you were actually wound up voting for Pat Buchanan. And you had thousands, it was a terrible anti-Semite, and you had thousands of Jews in South Florida who thought they were voting for Gore because they loved Joe Lieberman, and instead they were voting for Pat Buchanan. Pat Buchanan had a huge vote count in Jewish precincts in South Florida because they rigged the ballot. And then there was all this nightmare. You aren't old enough to remember, but they're in the precincts, they're all sitting there looking at the ballots and hanging chads and all that stuff. And it was a complete fiasco, and it was meant to be a fiasco. And Florida had on the books a deadline, which became a crucial in 2018, where the recounts had to be done or they stopped, right? And so they're in the process of doing the recounts, and a terrorist organization came in and terrorized the people who were doing the recounts. If you remember that, this was the Brooks Brothers riot. I'm not letting you guys get a word in edgewise. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Okay.
So this is what's called a history lecture. So the Brooks Brothers riot, these well-dressed thugs came in and they terrorized the people who were counting the votes, counting the ballots. And they made sure that the ballots didn't get counted on time. And the lawyer for that group was this guy who's on the Supreme Court now, Kavanaugh. And that's where he got his start, suppressing the vote count in South Florida. But what happened then was, because the fiasco was so well publicized, the Republicans in Congress said, oh, we can't have paper ballots anymore. It's too confusing. And so they passed in 2002 something called the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA. And the Help America Vote Act set up $2 billion so that the states could buy electronic voting machines, right? And these electronic voting machines had no paper trail. So what you did, they're touchscreen machines called DREs, or direct recorded entry. But to vote after 2002, all over the country, you went in and you didn't get a paper ballot, you pushed on a touchscreen. And you had no idea what happened to your vote. It went into a black box. And basically, those machines are incredibly easy to hack. And hacked they were. So from 2002 to the mid-2010s, 2015, 2016, and so on, we had this generation of direct recorded entry, DRE, touchscreen computer machines. Incredibly easy to hack. I mean, you could just, it's 10 keystrokes, you could change a whole election. And believe me, they did. The machines are so easy to hack. There's a professor at the University of Michigan, where I went, who programmed one of these machines to play the University of Michigan fight song. Now, let's take this one. Hail to the victors, right? You know, I was proud of my school, but, you know, it wasn't reassuring about our elections. So what's happened now is a perfect storm. Because this generation of voting machines that was funded by HAVA is now 10, 15 years old, and they're going extinct. You know, they don't operate anymore. I don't have to tell you what a 15-year-old computer is like. And so we have a perfect storm between the COVID, you know, the pandemic, and the extinction of these computer machines. Because what we now because you have to do the election vote by mail. You cannot have people turn up. I mean, those people in Wisconsin got sick. It appears that some people may have died from having gone out to vote. Can't do that. So very clearly, there's an indisputable case for vote by mail in 2020. And whereas absentee ballots in general have been about 5% of the vote, this year we expect it to be 80% or more in many states. Now, we have had five states that have progressed from the 1980s who have been doing vote by mail very successfully. It takes a while, but you get it down and you can do it. It was led by Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Utah, and Hawaii. They've all been doing vote by mail. It works very well. You do not want voting on the internet. You can have people register on the internet. That's fine. But you cannot have votes going over the internet. Totally hackable. No way you can protect it. Now the state of California is going to go 100% vote by mail. That's 10% of the country. Now there'll be plenty of glitches, but the thing that makes it revolutionary, and it is revolutionary, is we're back to paper ballots. And paper ballots are the way you have to go. And there, in the interim, there is now a machine which is in about 80% of the precincts around the country. There's 3,141 counties in America. So that's how many election boards there are. It's done by county, right? Many, many precincts within the counties, but one election board per county. So these counties now, 80% of the counties now, have digital scanning devices. And this is also revolutionary, where you get a paper ballot. The ideal form, I vote in LA. So I voted in 2018. I got my ballot in the mail. I marked it up. I went to the local precinct on Sunday, not on Tuesday. Do not wait till Tuesday to vote, everybody. Vote on Sunday or before. Vote early. If you can't vote often, at least vote early. So I took my ballot in. They were glad to see me. There was no line. They showed me how to do what I had to do. I put in the ballot. I was done. A reasonable belief that my ballot was actually counted. Now, this is Los Angeles. This is where everybody in California needs to vote this way. Make sure you're registered. Go online and check. Make sure you get the ballot, but do not mail it back in. Walk it in. Take it to the precinct. Don't trust the Postal Service. And I'm a big fan of the Postal Service. I love the Postal Service. But they're going to be swamped. And then they'll be fighting over your ballot. Walk it in. And walk it in on Sunday or before. So what we can do if we get through this election and the whole country goes to vote by mail, what we also have at the tail end in 80% of the precincts is a digital scanning device. It's the simplest thing in the world. You take the ballot, you insert it into the device, it creates a digital image of the ballot, and then the ballot itself goes into a bin on the other side. And the machine counts the digital images. So you can actually get a vote count after a huge, even in LA, you can get a vote count in a matter of minutes by counting the digital scan. Once you scan them in, and you don't want to be scanning them in before, you want the polls to close, and then you scan them in, and then you get the digital vote count, and then you still have the paper ballots for the recount. This can absolutely revolutionize our voting system. There's absolutely no way around it. We don't have to. We want to hand count paper ballots in a recount, but we don't have to hand count them in the initial tally because. Certainly the digital scanning machines can be hacked, but they're not hooked up to the internet. And if they're not hooked up to the internet, it'd be tough to hack them. And it's way simpler than the touchscreen machines. So this is a door to a reliable election. Mail out paper ballots to all registered voters, have them walk them in, run them through the digital scanning device, count the digital images, and recount the paper ballots. That's the way it needs to be done.
So what are the chances that it will be done that way?
It will be done that way in Colorado, Utah, Oregon, Washington, Hawaii, and California. The rest of the country is up for grabs. And, that's what we're finding tooth and nail right now. We have started a group called the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition. Our email, our website is grassrootsep.org. And everybody needs to go there. And our strategy is to have people in every precinct in the country who are going to check the trifecta, the registration rolls, the vote by mail, and then the vote count. This election will not be decided on election day because Trump will challenge every state. We need people in the precincts when the vote count is being done after the election to make sure that it's protected. Now, let me tell you what happened in 20. Oh, go ahead, please.
Well, I was just wondering how that recruitment is going to get people in every precinct, every voting precinct.
Well, we're just starting.
Okay.
If you know people in other states, do it in California, certainly, but anywhere, everywhere, none of this, it's not enough in 2020 to vote. You can't just vote. You can't say, just register and go vote and get your sticker and feel good. You got to be a precinct worker. You got to be a poll worker. You got to be a vote counter. You got to make sure that the votes go out. Yeah, and on the registration rolls are public records. You can check the registration rolls. You can find out if you're registered or not. You can find out if your neighbor's registered, your neighbor's neighbor, your friends, your relatives in other states. Call them up, say, check the registration rolls, make sure you're registered. People are being stripped for no reason, like they did in Florida 2000, Ohio 2004, and all the swing states in 2016. You know, and it's outrageous what happened. Hillary Clinton, you asked about why Trump's in the White House. Hillary Clinton put Donald Trump in the White House. Absolutely. First of all, she was a miserable candidate. She campaigned like Marie Antoinette. You know, Bernie campaigned harder for Hillary Clinton than Hillary Clinton did, for God's sakes. But after the election, Jill Stein, who's a friend of mine, and she was the Green Party candidate, went into Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania with my co-writer, Bob Fitrake, who's a PhD in political scientist, and he did vote monitoring in El Salvador in the 80s. They went into Michigan, and they won a court decision to get a recount in Michigan because Trump allegedly won Michigan by less than 12,000 votes. But there were 70,000 votes that came in from Detroit and Flint with no apparent choice for president. Do I need to repeat that?
No.
There were 70,000 votes with no apparent choice. It's like all these people waited 5 hours in line and got there and said, oh, I'm not going to vote for president at all. I'll vote for these others. Come on. And we know how they do this. There's an algorithm. It's no mystery. And Jill went to the court, got a decision saying, yes, there needs to be a recount. But she, under Michigan law, she had to have a mathematical chance to win in order to have standing to get a recount. And she didn't. She couldn't have won. So the judge says, well, basically, if Hillary Clinton will sign on, we'll do a recount. And the state would have flipped. There's absolutely no doubt that Michigan would have flipped in a recount in 2016. But Hillary couldn't be bothered. Her lawyers were in the courtroom when the judge rendered that decision. And he asked them, well, do you want to sign on to the recount? And they said, oh, well, we're just here observing. And they never did the recount.
Why did she want to sign on to the recount?
Ask
Why
her.
Why did she do that? Well,
you know, ask her shrink.
Do you have a guess?
No, I have no idea. She just didn't care enough. She did not care enough. And we had the same thing with Gore in 2000 and Kerry in 2004. We showed Kerry's people 100 ways from Sunday how the Republicans stole the 2004 election in Ohio. I mean, I could talk to you for the next 2 hours about how they did it. We did talk for 2 hours to Kerry's people in Columbus, and we explained to them how it was done. And John Edwards, Kerry's running mate, begged Kerry to not concede, and he conceded the next day at 1 o'clock. He lost Ohio by less than 120,000 votes, and there were 240,000 uncounted ballots in Ohio when he conceded. Mm-hmm. There were 90,000 that were never counted in Ohio. Now, to this day, 90,000 votes in Ohio were never counted. So, you know, these Democrats, they just don't seem to care. The question is, on November 4th this year, if Trump emerges with a clearly stolen election, will Biden fight? We don't know. You know, who knows? Is he going to roll over like Gore and Kerry and Clinton? We don't know. And that's the big question of the election. But I guarantee you, if the vote was held today, Trump would win. I don't care about the polls, because people will show up to vote and they won't be on the voter rolls. They'll ask for a ballot, there won't be a ballot, and then the vote count will be flipped. And you'll have these guys with their guns show up at the polls, and you know, there was a rally in Columbus 2 weeks ago. 1,000 people showed up with guns, automatics and you know, submachine guns and all this stuff on the state house steps in Columbus. And they will show up at the polls. That's one of the reasons we've got to vote by mail. We're also advocating, you know, there do have to be voting places, even with vote by mail. People come in, they want to vote the same day, they're not registered. Some states have same day registration. They have problems. There's something with the ballot. They didn't get it. Most frequently, they didn't get a ballot. They signed up. They're supposed to get a ballot in the mail, and they mysteriously doesn't arrive, which the Republicans are very good at. And also, they also love to misprint the ballots. In southwestern Ohio, in 2004, they sent out absentee ballots that did not have Kerry's name on them. So this ballot arrives. You want to vote for John Kerry for president. He's the Democratic nominee. He's not on the ballot. So people have to get in now. We have less than 100 days. They got to go in there. They got to make sure that when the proof for the ballot goes to the printer, that it's correct. That maybe Biden's name should be on there, you know, because there's no guarantee. And they get the wrong dates. They can do anything to screw up a ballot. Mm-hmm. They did a lot of it in the primaries. They had the wrong dates on the primaries. They omitted candidates. They did all sorts of stuff. We have to have people inside the election board looking at the ballot when it goes to the printer, making sure it gets back from the printer on time, making sure it goes out on time, making sure people are registered, making sure that there's postage. They're supposed to have return postage on the ballots to come back in. But again, we're encouraging people to walk them in. There has to be a place people can go to vote if they need to before November 3rd. You know, in at least 2 weeks, the voting stations should be open before mm-hmm. November 3rd. We want drop boxes. You know, a drop box is relatively inexpensive. They should be. Since in 2018, there were 116,990 places where you could vote in the United States. That's way too many. And it's not possible this year because of the virus. And one of the reasons it's not possible is because most of the poll workers in America have been elderly. And the last thing we want is elderly people working the polls. So there has to be a generational changeover of poll workers.
So are you partnering with anybody else in this emergency election?
Yes,
emergency?
We're trying. We're partnering with Progressive Democrats of America, People Demanding Action, Greenpeace.
How about Sunrise?
Sunrise, Indivisible.
Yeah. People who are
yes, and, Vote Now, Vote USA. There are about two dozen groups out there, but we don't know what everybody's doing. And we don't care. We're not looking to build any kind of monolithic group. Mm-hmm. Last thing we want is an organization with officers and titles and blah, blah. What we want is everybody working, not necessarily on the same page, but certainly with the same information. So there are a lot of groups out there. We don't know what they're doing. We don't know what Stacey Abrams' group is doing. We don't know what the Democratic Party is doing.
Yeah.
You know, so The last people we want to trust with this election is the Democratic Party. I mean, I met Tom Perez, the chair of the DNC, at a convention. I handed him, Bob and I wrote a history of, if you go to grassrootsep.org, there is a tab that says strip and flip history. And Bob Fitrakis and I wrote a history of election theft in America. It's 150 pages. And you can download it for free. It's a PDF. Mm-hmm. And just read. It takes 2 hours to read this book. It's very small, very short. And you'll understand how elections have been stolen. I handed a paper copy of that book to Tom Perez. And he looked at me like, you know, I was a homeless person asking for a handout. I mean, just, there's just no there. So we cannot trust in any way, shape, or form the Democratic Party. And we have to reach in. This election will be decided in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, Arizona, maybe Ohio. Ohio is so corrupt. I mean, we just had a $60 million bribe case. The Speaker of the House of Representatives of the state of Ohio took $60 million in bribes to pass a bailout for the two nuclear plants on Lake Erie. And now he's refusing to resign. He doesn't think he did anything wrong. And that's, and we have the same, he's a Republican, and the same thing is happening in Illinois on nuclear bailouts with a Democrat who's the Speaker of the Illinois House. And we just had a guy in South Carolina who was the vice president of a major utility plead guilty to taking, to misleading the public on a nuclear plant that got canceled that cost everybody $9 billion. I mean, this is an incredibly corrupt time. We're at the end of the empire here. And so, you know, we need people on the ground. We have a very simple strategy. The strategy is this. We have to have activists in every precinct, every election board in the country, especially in the key swing states. You can point there, you can name 40 counties where the election will be decided, okay? And we have to have statewide organizations that people can call, because all the laws governing the elections are state laws. So we need a state board of experts that the people in the election boards can call for guidance and even for some political help. Now, one of the big differences between 2020 and 2016 is that in 2016, only of the swing states, only Pennsylvania had a Democratic governor. But you now have Democratic governors in Wisconsin, Michigan, and North Carolina. Now, how much it helps us is not clear. You know, they're not getting the message. People can't get their head around the fact that these elections are being stolen. You know, I've been working on this for 16 years, and we're still at a level where if I tell people what's going on, they say it's conspiracy theory. Well, it is conspiracy theory, but there is a conspiracy. That's the problem. And it's been a very effective conspiracy. And it will be effective again in 2020. I mean, you know, in a way, I'm grateful that the Democrats really didn't nominate anybody for president. Right? I mean, they've got this hologram sitting in a basement somewhere, and they're calling it Joe Biden. But he could not, I mean, nobody could do a better job of running against Trump than Trump. And he's been spectacular. And we hope it continues. But we can't count on that forever. And the one thing we need from Joe Biden is to not concede. And maybe if the Democrats were actually put some people in the field and go into the election boards and help, that would be good. Okay. There's a group of people demanding action, Andrea Miller, who is re-registering people. And they've been very successful at that, but she's only working in a small number of states. That has to happen nationwide. You know, we've been following it in Ohio. Every 2 years, they strip another 500,000 people off the registration rolls in Ohio. It's 10%. And then, you know, it's just a nightmare. But it's known. It's not rocket science. It's just a trifecta. Strip the registration rolls, sabotage vote by mail. And there's about 20 different, I have an article up. If you go to grassrootsep.org, mm-hmm. and look under articles, trifecta articles, about five articles that lay out They're all published at reader-supported news, rsn.org. And we need to support that website. And they, my article is just basically, there's like a dozen articles that lay out exactly what we're talking about. It's not that complicated. So that's what we're...
I wanted to transition. Let's assume Mr. Biden is elected. Could you talk to us a little bit about the post-Trump era? Is there any hope? You're not very confident that the Democrats are doing much. Let us know what you think.
Well, I don't think Biden will last more than a year. I think he's way too old. I mean, I'm 74. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine being president of the United States at my age. And, you know, whoever he nominates... You know, I've been, I politically, I'm very supportive of Elizabeth Warren. I think she's pretty good. She voted for a cut in the military budget. My guess is he's going to go with Kamala Harris, you know, and she's nowhere near as progressive as she is. But, you know, Biden was, people have to understand, Bill Clinton, in terms of policy, and this is in my history book, and I'd be glad to talk to you when it comes out about him. Bill Clinton was a terrible president in terms of policy. You cannot, the only tangible, well, he did one great thing. He brokered a peace in Northern Ireland. And he should have gotten the Nobel, him and George Mitchell, they should have gotten the Nobel Prize for it. That was a magnificent accomplishment. Beyond that, the only tangible thing that Bill Clinton accomplished when he was president was to instigate a national dialogue on oral sex. That was, you know, much needed, and that's all he really did. Beyond that, nothing. He accomplished nothing good, Bill Clinton. Obama did very, very little. He did prove beautifully that a black man can handle being president of the United States. If you look at Bush on one side and Trump on the other, I mean, Obama is Mount Everest, for God's sakes. He's a brilliant guy, handled himself beautifully. The most of all the presidencies in the history of the United States, Barack Obama's 8 years were the most scandal-free that we've had. Not a hint of scandal anywhere, personal, financial, but policy-wise, he wasn't much. If he had pulled us out of Afghanistan, Trump would not be in the White House. And absolutely no excuse for accepting the Nobel Prize and then escalating the war. Just and look at what's happened. Absolutely terrible that he did that. And other than that, he was more or less harmless. He did fund this nuclear plant in Georgia, which is an utter catastrophe. It's up to $30 billion. I mean, it wouldn't happen if he hadn't given a loan. Should never have done that. And I don't think it would ever go online. So, you know, Obama, policy-wise, was kind of in the middle. Presentation-wise, he was at the top of the heap. But he didn't accomplish anything. If you're a working person in this country, it's been a nightmare. You know, we were headed, working people in America should be in great shape. There should be jobs for everybody. You know, Clinton in the 90s inherited two of the greatest financial windfalls in all of U.S. history, the end of the Cold War and the rise of the computer revolution. We should have been the most socially democratic country in the world and history. And he did nothing to promote it. And that's where Trump comes. People are angry. And so you ask, what will Biden accomplish? I think, actually, he will have to move on health care for all, and he'll have to move on green energy. And there'll be a few things that he's going to have to do. And then his vice president, who I think will take over within a year, we'll have to forward it, and I think you'll have a much better Congress. And I think, by the way, and you did not hear it first, I'm sure, that AOC will be president. That speech, oh, absolutely. She's 30 now, so she can't run for 6 years. So she could run in 28. And I think she could win. She is really brilliant, and she is a great, that speech she gave on the floor of the House, she is mesmerizing. And so I'm looking forward to that new generation. The millennials will take power. The millennial generation is actually bigger than the baby boom. And, you know, I'm technically not a baby boomer. I was born December 31st, 1945. And the baby boom officially started 8 hours after I was born. So I have distance. But we were confronted in the 1960s, our generation, with two major revolutions. Ending the empire, which we failed to do. You know, we got the war in Vietnam sort of ended, and you know, there was a time when we weren't conquering other countries, but we're back to being an empire. And Obama, you know, that was his downfall. He kept it going. We were also confronted with a cultural revolution. That one, we won. Mm-hmm. We did win the cultural revolution. It's not 100%, but, you know, gay marriage, marijuana, rock and roll, dress, sex. I mean, come on. You know, we did change the world, but we have not ended the empire. The millennials are going to have to end the empire. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if we get there. So I can tell from our Zoom that you guys would like to get a word in edgewise.
No, it's okay. What we were hoping was that you'd take the ball and run with it, which you did, or you throw the ball and run the bases or whatever. But we heard.
Well, Trump has also Trump has managed to kill sports in America.
Oh, my God.
Who would have thought that he could kill sports, for God's sake? Mm-hmm. I mean, the only sport you can actually play safely is my favorite sport, which is tennis.
Tennis.
Yeah. You know, we should all be watching tennis. That's the only sport you can do. There, and you can't even do doubles. It's all got to be singles.
Right. Shuffleboard is the other one.
Shuffleboard, yes. Bocce ball.
Yes, there you go.
So our guest has been Harvey Wasserman, also known as Sluggo. Please go to solartopia.org and also go to Grassroots EP. So it's Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition. So it's grassrootsep.org. Right. And you'll learn all about the election and see how you can become involved. If people go there, can they figure out a way they can be a part of it?
Yes, we have a Zoom call every Monday, and it's been growing. Last one we had 90 people, and so we want to keep it up. You guys should come on, and we talk about the organizing of how we're going to. We've had 13 90-minute Zoom calls, basically going through with the experts everything that's involved with the mechanics of the election. We are now shifting focus to actual organizing. Okay. And we're having groups that are in the field and organizers who are in the field come in and talk about what they're doing state by state. We have to recognize this is not a national election. It's 50 state elections. Every state has different laws and every precinct has different dynamics. There are 3,141 precinct counties in this country. There are 50 states in the District of Columbia. One of the things, by the way, that Biden has to do if he gets in the White House and we get a Democratic Congress is to make D.C. a state.
Yes.
Yeah. My sister, niece, and nephew live in D.C. And I think Puerto Rico should become a state, too.
Yes. Yeah. Two more
right?
states.
Yeah. And then the marijuana state of mind could be the 53rd state. Everybody who's on pot could have their own vote. So anyway, we'll let that go.
Okay, thank you, Sluggo. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, we'll call you in January and talk about the new book.
Yes, please. And hopefully, you know, the new government and all that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Right.
I'm really glad we did this by Zoom. It's much more fun to look at my hosts. And,
yeah,
and it is. It is indeed.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you, guys. See ya.
Well, obviously, we had a great time talking with Harvey Wasserman, strongly opinionated, but in our opinion, right thinking. And that tape was made just a couple of days ago, but the whole question of voter suppression, election theft, has blossomed over the past two or three days, making what Harvey has to say more relevant than ever. Wish we had known that Kamala Harris was going to be the VP choice for Biden in time for that interview. We'd love to hear what Harvey has to say about that. Coming up at 7 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whenever. We're still on a different time zone. 6 o'clock tonight, it's Radioactive with Ginger Nichols. As you know, we're doing a series of programs on Ecotopia called Radical Change. We're inviting people to give their uninhibited, uncensored views of what really needs to happen in the country to bring about radical change. And as several of our guests have suggested, now is the time with the COVID-19 catastrophe, with the election coming, with so much going on in our country and so much going wrong in our country, this is the time for radical change, for putting our energies toward making significant change. And we'll have additional shows in this program. We're talking with a potential interviewee about radical change in education, which might even include the idea of de-schooling society. And we'll look to other speakers. We would love to hear from listeners about possible guests for this series. Let us know. We're at ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com. And we're on the web at www.ecotopiakzfr.com. So check out that website. We're also now podcasting. You can go to Anchor, to Spotify, to Apple Podcasts, and to several other sites to get the most recent recordings of Ecotopia shows and to listen to a number of recent programs. That's it for Ecotopia for this evening. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Stephen Chudy.
And I'm Susan Chudy. Good night.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside. The day the music died. So bye, bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Then good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die.
This'll be the day that I die.
This'll be the day that I die. Now for 10 years we've been on our own, and Moss grows fat on a rolling stone. But that's not how it used to be. When the jester sang for the king and queen in a coat he borrowed from James Dean, and a voice that came from you and me. Oh, and while the king was looking down, the jester stole his thorny crown. The courtroom was adjourned. The verdict was returned. And while Lenin read a book on Marx, a quartet practiced in the park, and we sang dirges in the dark.
The day the music died,
and we were singing
bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye,
singing, this will be the day that I die.
This will be the day that I die.
This will be the day that I die. Oh, and there we were all in one place, a generation lost in space, with no time left to start again. So come on, Jack, be nimble, Jack, be quick. Jack Flash sat on a candlestick, 'cause fire is the devil's only friend. Oh, and as I watched him on the stage,
clenched in fists of rage. No